So the next question, in walking, lifting, pushing, dropping, pressing, I have tried to see the process, but pointing and touching are too short. So just feel the action. So long as not focusing on heel, foot, rupa, that will do correct. Meditators should increase the objects of meditation gradually. Usually, meditators might have to be mindful of left, right for about 15 to 20 minutes. Then be mindful of lifting, pushing, dropping for the rest of time. So meditators only mindful of this process of movements on the first day, second day of retreats. Then, if they are able to slow down and they could mindful of the process, processes of left, right, lifting, pushing, dropping quite precisely, attentively, and they could slow down quite naturally, then they may increase the objects of walking meditation, for example, to lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing. So here, I'm not very sure what does the yogi mean pointing. Maybe she's one of the yogis who came for the private interview. Meditators should perceive the movements and know it. If they are able to walk slower, then they may increase the objects. For example, tomorrow morning, they may mindful of left, right, about 10 to 15 minutes. Then be mindful of lifting, pushing, dropping, at least 25 minutes to 30 minutes. Then be mindful of five objects, lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, and pressing. Sometimes meditators could not note certain processes. For example, dropping. Some meditators perceive it as a very short process of movements, sometimes a quick process of dropping. If meditators are not able to make any mental noting, then they may just be aware there's a process dropping or quick process dropping without mental noting. As I explained, mental noting means you mentally say lifting, pushing, dropping. So you take note mentally. So that mental noting is not so precise at the beginning of practice. But the most important point is to perceive the process of movements well, then make the mental note. So sometimes meditators perceive, for example, the pushing movements, then they only mentally note pushing in the middle process. It's acceptable. So they make a mental noting in the middle process pushing, then they should keep their mindfulness with the pushing movements. So they perceive the movements well, then they take note mentally. When the noting is getting more skillful, in words, when meditators are skillful in the mental noting, they could note it nearer and nearer to the beginner process. Eventually, when there's a little bit of movement, meditators could mindful and know it immediately. So here, what should be developed is mindfulness. Noting or labeling is not yet meditation. When you note lifting, pushing, dropping, that noting is merely help you to be more attentive or to be more precise in your mindfulness. And then noting, labeling leads the mind to the actual process movements or to the object that was noted at the time. So noting is not yet meditation, but when you meditate on the object that you were noted, for the lifting, pushing, dropping, then you are practicing meditation, you are developing mindfulness. So if meditators could not slow down the movements, they may not able to perceive the passing, pressing clearly. Sometimes meditators feel that the dropping, passing, pressing happening so fast or occurring so fast, they could not see them clearly as three separate objects. So dropping is one object, touching is another object, pressing is another object. If the movement is too fast, meditators may think all these three objects are happening almost at the same moment. So if you put effort to mindful and note five objects tomorrow, for example, in your last 15 minutes of walking, you could not perceive these three separate objects clearly, then in the next session of walking, you may not have to mindful of five objects. Then you mindful of three objects again. So usually, we increase the objects of walking meditation gradually. So if meditators wish to mindful five objects, they mindful left, right, at least 10 to 15 minutes. Then be mindful of lifting, pushing, dropping for about 25 to 30 minutes. Then in the last 15 minutes walking, then they should slow down, be mindful of lifting, aware there's lifting movement, not lifting, aware there's pushing, not pushing, aware there's dropping, not dropping. When the foot touching the floor, they mindful and note it as touching. They may note it once or twice while dropping the foot down. They should not purposely feel the coldness of the floor or hardness of the floor. If meditators purposely feel the floor cold or warm or hard or smooth, then it's not mindfulness anymore. You are merely searching for an experience. But in meditation, we do not purposely search for that experience. So when your mindfulness and concentration are strong enough, you would realize, for example, hardness as hardness, coldness as coldness, and so on. So meditators should mindful of touching, assuming that at that moment coldness manifested clearly, then meditators only note the coldness. So be mindful of touching. As meditators wanting to lift the foot at the back, the body is moving forward. So meditators need not have to pay attention to that body movements, at the time they feel there's a pressing sensation arising in the front foot. So they mindful and look pressing. They do not have to use any force or energy to press it down. So they mindful pressing up to a certain extent, the heel of the foot at the back will be leaving from the floor by itself. Then the note lifting, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing, lifting, and so on. And then the other important point is that meditators have to realize every movement is an object. Lifting process is another object. Is one object, pushing is another object, dropping is another object, touching is another object, and so on. So meditators have to realize that the mindfulness or awareness is arising dependent on the object. When there's lifting movements, then the mindfulness will be arising and note that lifting movements. At the end, the process of lifting, we can say that object had disappeared. So meditators should not keep the mindfulness there or hold their mindfulness there. Now, if meditators keep the mindfulness there and continue to note the next process, pushing, then they keep the mindfulness there, continue to note the dropping, then the mindfulness continue to note the touching, pressing, then some meditators bring that mindfulness, that posture mindfulness, to the back of the heel and continue to note the next process lifting, continue to note the next process of pushing, dropping. In that way, meditators not following the guidelines of the practice. It's because they control the mindfulness, holding that posture mindfulness tightly, so that this mindfulness will be mindful and noting one process movements one after another, from lifting to pushing to dropping to touching, pressing, and so on. In that way, meditators is inclining towards developing concentration, not so much mindfulness. Whenever meditators realize that lifting movements, they note it as lifting. When that lifting movements finish, they just let go of the mindfulness and push your foot naturally to front. They realize that there's another process pushing, they can note it again. And then pushing, they just let go that focusing, as, in other words, do not keep the attention there. Then they just drop the foot down in the next movement. When they realize there's a dropping movement, then they can mindful and note it. Then when they're touching, then they note touching. After noting touching, they as if let go of the do not keep the attention there. When they feel there's a pressing, then they could mindful and note it again. So in other words, there's no single process of mindfulness. You understand this way of the practice, do you think that there's only one and single process mindfulness that has been mindful and noting various process movements? Or do you think there are more than one process of mindfulness? More than one process mindfulness. Because lifting movements is an object. When there's a process when there's an object, then the mindfulness arising, note that lifting movements. When this object lifting movements disappear, you won't understand the teaching Buddha. Whatever arising dependent on the object. If that object is not permanent, definitely one this mindfulness or this noting mind arising dependent on the impermanent object is also subject to passing away. Then when there's a pushing movements, pushing movements is another new another object, then there will be arising of another process mindfulness. You can say that the next process mindfulness is a new process. It's not a previous process. It's not easy to realize clearly. There are various process movements until you have sharpened your mindfulness and attain deeper and deeper concentration. Then you realize that the mindfulness, there's no one mindfulness that has been mindful, that has been mindful and note various objects. Sometimes meditators think that they have to bring the mindfulness from non-object to another object. But actually, mindfulness also has a characteristic of anatta. You can't exercise control over its arising and passing away. The arising of mindfulness or awareness is also always dependent on object. So it's important to have this right understanding. Then another question, five aggregates means you can say the body or body phenomena, feeling, perception, mental formation and consciousness. Which one is mental states under four foundations? So four foundations, the first one is kaya nupasana satipatthana. So all these bodies, all these are rupa. But from the second foundation, third foundation and fourth foundation, we can say all mental phenomena, they are various mental states. Except in the in the fourth foundation, mindfulness dharma, one of the subject is five aggregates of clinging. So the first aggregate is materiality or body phenomena that consists of four material elements. So in the fourth foundation, all phenomena are considered mental objects except the aggregates of materiality. But during the practice of meditators should not analyze. When seeing impatience becoming frustrations, is the volume increased to peak with a density? Anger accumulations and few body tensions, facial muscles tense up. Are there two processes for us to see? One's mental state in terms of volumes, density and rising or falling. Two is body sensation. First is feeling or mind. Then second is kaya body. So sometimes meditators perceive two different phenomena or two different objects. One is arising in the mind, the other is in the body. So we always give priority to mental object. As explained earlier in the previous talk, we always give priority to mental object because meditation is mental training of mental culture, mental development. So be mindful of the mental object arising at that moment is more important than mindful of the physical object or body sensation. So meditators have to mindful and note the mental object. For example, anger. So sometimes certain mental states, anger, may give rise to certain body reactions, such as body tension and so on. But in this case, we still have to mindful of anger. Know it until the anger disappears. Then if the body tension is still very obvious, then you only pay attention to that body tension. So meditators must bear in mind that be mindful of the mental states that is arising at that moment is more important than the physical process or body sensation. When a mental state has disappeared, then meditators should be very mindful, note whatever body object or body sensation which is more distinct, they should mindful and note it attentively, precisely. If meditators could not mindful and note attentively, precisely whatever body object or sensation that's arising at that moment, then the mind will be wandering, thinking very frequently. So here I wish to clarify the guidelines of the practice. We also emphasize that mindfulness meditators should be mindful of whatever object that's predominantly arising at that moment. If there are two different objects, one is a mental object, the other is a body object, then meditators should give priority to the mental object. When the mental object has disappeared, then they should quick enough to come back to the body objects in order to be mindful and note the body object, the most distinct body object or sensation that's arising at that moment. So we have this guideline to follow. That's to mindful of the most distinct body object or body sensation arising at that moment. It's because when the mindfulness is not well developed, then mindfulness could not note or pay attention to one object only. For example, at this stage of practice, when you're mindful of rising, falling movements, sometimes you do hear some noise, little bit of noise, or sometimes you feel little bit of pain or warm in the body. So it seems the mind is conscious of 2-3 objects or phenomena. So that's why we have to lay down the guideline or the principle that's to mindful of the most distinct object. If the movement of dormance is the most distinct object, then meditators should mindful of movement of dormance. Sometimes the movements getting weaker seems like not so clear, then there's a painful sensation arising, and that painful sensation is clearer than the movement of abdomen, then meditators should mindful of that painful sensation. So if the mindfulness is active and alert, as soon as meditators know there's a stronger painful sensation arising, the mindfulness will appear there by itself. Meditators need not have to bring the mindfulness from the movement of dormance in order to note that stronger object, in other words, the stronger pain. If meditators exercise a strong control over the process mindfulness, then sometimes meditators just might think that while I'm mindful of rising, falling, the mind is still thinking of something, but my mindfulness still staying with the movement of abdomen. But a meditator who is endowed with active and alert mindfulness, as long as they know their thinking, the mindfulness will note their thinking immediately, no longer staying with the movements of rising or falling. So when meditators keep on practicing and is able to attain deeper and deeper concentration, then you come to realize that at each moment or each second, the mindfulness only perceives one object only. So there's a time meditators have attained deep concentration, or known as vipassana concentration or vipassana samadhi. Samadhi means concentration or momentary concentration. There's a time meditator's mindfulness is so strong and precise that the mindfulness only perceives one phenomenon at each moment. And that phenomenon does not last long. That phenomenon will be arising and passing away instantly. Then there will be another object arising. Mindfulness only notice this object. The mind, you're not conscious of other objects or less distinct objects. So in other words, at that time, the meditators are able to pay full attention to one object at each moment. So when meditators are able to pay full attention to one object at that moment, then the guideline is to mindful of the most distinct object. That guideline is no longer applied at that moment. So at the beginning of practice, the mindfulness is not strong. Sometimes meditators perceive or sensing that there are 2-3 objects or 3-4 objects are happening, then they should train their mindfulness to note the most distinct object. If there's a mental object arising, then they should give priority to that mental object. So meditators should bear in mind about this guideline. Sometimes the guideline does not apply when meditators have attained deep concentration, such as momentary concentration or vipassana samadhi. To note the thinking, experienced noting it as mid of thinking, middle of the thinking, end of thinking. So if the awareness is sharp and able to note as mid, end of thinking, should we note it or just general label or note as thinking? We note thinking as thinking. We do not conceptualize the experience, for example, end of thinking, or sometimes some meditators note the object as beginning or appearing. When an object ended or disappeared, they note disappear. We do not take note in this way. We just mindful note thinking. What should be realized is that process thinking. We do not. So in other words, we have to realize the arising and passing away of thinking, or the arising passing away of any objects. We merely note it, for example, thinking or just planning, note it as planning. Or when there's process movements such lifting, we note it lifting. But we do not conceptualize our experience. Even we do realize that we could note it right at the beginning of the object or in the middle process, we still note it as thinking or lifting as lifting. So we do not conceptualize our experience. We just be mindful and experience the process of the thinking or the process of any phenomena such as lifting movements, pushing movements as they really are. So if you have to conceptualize the experience, then you have to analyze reflecting on your experience and so on. So in that way, it might disrupt the flow of the mindfulness. Then the next question: when a Vipassana yogi, a practitioner, come to the end of the life, the breath or the stomach rising falling might be irregular or could be fast. At this moment, it's hard to observe the rising falling. What should the practitioner do at this near-death moment? So sometimes we are very concerned about last moment, not at the present moment. So if one understand the practice or has gained a real experience of practice, they will know that the movements of rising falling subjects to a lot of changes. Sometimes could be fast, slow, or sometimes could be long, short, and so on. So at that time, if the rising falling movements are clear, although the yogi says irregular, if the mind is still clear, then they should be mindful of these movements of rising or movement falling as it really occur. If the process of rising is a fast process or rapid process, then they just mindful as a rapid process. If the falling process slow down, then they mindful as a slow process of falling movements. If there's mental states arising without worry, then they mindful worry. If there's a thinking arising, then they mindful thinking and so on. So assuming that if a person or Vipassana practitioner approaching death, if the mind is very clear, then they could continue their practice, their mindfulness, or continue to develop mindfulness even till the last moment of death. According to the teaching of Buddha, if one is endowed with very sharp faculties, the sharp mental faculties, confidence of faith, or impari sadda, virya effort, sati mindfulness, samadhi concentration, and panya, then one is able to attain the highest stage of enlightenment. If one is endowed with very sharp and powerful mental faculties, and these five mental faculties are kept in balance, so they could attain enlightenment, the high stage of enlightenment in this life. Assuming that they have not attained enlightenment, but if they continue the practice according to that sutta, what is possible to attain higher stage of enlightenment in the last movement of death. If one can't attain the higher stage of enlightenment before passing away, then one may be able to attain the third stage of enlightenment, anagami. So that's why one should practice constantly in order to sharpen the five mental faculties. Sometimes some yogis mental faculties may not be sharp. Some yogis mental faculties are sharp and so on. But one can sharpen their mental faculties if the mental faculties are not sharp. One of the ways to sharpen the mental faculties is by constant and continuous mindfulness. So at the beginning of practice, our mental faculties are not so sharp, but you do put effort to develop constant and continuous mindfulness, eventually your mental faculties will be sharpened. Then this condition to attain enlightenment. So, then the next question: a good karma person might be rebirthed to heaven realms or human realms. So, in case of human realm, can one still continue practicing vipassana there? Or what is Bhante's advice for next life? Or for continuing practicing vipassana, heaven realms or human realms is better. Actually, one should strive to achieve it in this life. The future is always uncertain. What happens when one is born in the human realm, but the Dharma has disappeared? So when Dharma has disappeared, then no one will be teaching you the way leading to the liberation from samsara. You born a heaven or deva realms, then it's also dependent on your practice in this life. It's all depending on your practice in this life. There are many deva. According to the teachings and some stories told by Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw in his writings, there are many Sotapanna. They were practicing like you during the Buddha's time and attain Sotapanna and be born in the Deva world. Assuming that one is practicing Vipassana and could not attain any stages of enlightenment in this life, assuming that they are born in the Deva realms and able to meet those enlightened Deva means those Deva who have attained at least the first stage of enlightenment and have the chance to hear them hear from them the teaching of Buddha, then one may have the condition to attain the noble path. Noble path means enlightenment in the Deva world. It is because the Deva, Devas, their bodies are very defined. So the consciousness that arises depending on this very defined body. Defined bodies mean the bodies like very subtle matter, So the consciousness arising depending on this very refined body is very sharp and swift. And then if they can remember how they have been practicing meditation in the human existence, then they may be able to realize the arising and passing way of mental and physical phenomena and attain enlightenment in the Deva world. There's a story told by Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw. During the Buddha's time, there was a Sakyan lady by the name of Gopika. He attained enlightenment, the first stage of enlightenment, and known as Sotapanna, the stream winner. And then he passed away and born as a son of the Sakka in the Tawapimsa world. So when she's born as a Deva, the son of Sakka, he's known as Gopaka. So living in the Tawapimsa world, he saw three Gandhabas. Do you know what's Gandhaba? Gandhaba means just like entertainers in the human world. They always entertain other devas through dancing, playing music. So these three Gandhabas come to Tawapimsa world and dance in his father's palace. He means the palace of the Sakka, the Lord Sakka. On reflection, Gopaka, now who is a Deva, son of Tawapimsa, he saw that these three Gandhabas was a monk in the previous life, and he had worshipped them in his former life. So he reminded them about their previous life and their practice. So two of the Gandhabas remember the Dharma that they have practiced in previous life as a monk. They quickly aroused the effort to meditate and attain deep concentration and attain the third stage of enlightenment that's known as anagami. And then anagami will not born in the sensual world anymore. Deva world is also one of the sensual worlds. So at that time they attain the third stage of enlightenment and take birth immediately in one of the Brahma realms known as Brahma Purohita realms. But the other could not remember the practice, so remain as Gandhaba. So that's why he will have strong inclination to practice. He always remember the practice. Then in you shall continue your practice in your next life. But you born in human realms, you must born at the time when Dharma has not disappeared. If born at the time when Dharma has disappeared in these human realms, then it's not possible to attain any stages of enlightenment. So that's why you must develop this inclination so that your mind always be mindful all the time. So that's why some meditation masters say that one should cultivate this habitual karma. In other words, at night before you sleep, you should practice mindfulness as much possible. When you wake up in the next morning, you should begin to mindful as much possible. Then in that way you may develop this habitual karma till the moment of passing away. As soon as you assuming that one has not attained the highest stage of enlightenment, when rebirth takes place again in the Deva world, one may be able to continue their practice, or when they have the chance to meet the noble Deva, then the noble Deva reminded them of their practice, then they will practice again and have chance to gain enlightenment. But the most important is to realize the Dharma in this very life. If you are able to put forth effort to strive diligently. So the next two questions, if there's no soul after we pass away, where do we go? What does rebirth mean in Buddhism? So this two questions asked by one yogi. Then the next yogi, another yogi asks, when you pass away, this physical body will cease functioning. All our five senses stop working. Therefore, there will be no consciousness of the physical senses, ear, nose, eye, taste, skin. Actually, not skin, it's a body. Will our consciousness of mental faculty carry on to the next existence? Then another yogi asks almost the same question. When we are alive, our consciousness creates our own world, either in hell or heaven, depends on how we think. When we pass away, where does consciousness go? Somebody told me it will go to hell or heaven depending on what we do when we are alive. Is that true? Actually, this questions is quite near the wrong view. You think your consciousness will go to another realm, actually this is wrong view. Consciousness is also arising and passing away. Yesterday I explained with the quoting from one of the teaching where the Buddha gave to Bhikkhu Sati. Maybe there's not enough time to explain fully, but consciousness is also arising and passing away. And when in the last moment, the consciousness is arising and passing away. So this consciousness, if not mistaken, in Pali called Chuti Vinyana, Vinyana. So Chuti means going for holiday, isn't it? Then the consciousness going for holiday, so it must pass away. So what will happen in the next moment? If the consciousness had disappeared, then do you think there will be arising of another consciousness? Based on your experience of meditation or your knowledge, do you think there will be arising of another consciousness? There's wrong view. This is a wrong view. The Buddha says it's very pernicious. Pernicious, harmful means can even lead you to rebirth in the lower realms with this wrong view. Buddha never say that consciousness is a permanent thing. Do you understand or do you know the definition of impermanence? But do you know the definition of impermanence? Do you know the definition of impermanent as explained by the scriptures or in the commentaries, also explained in very details? Do you know what's the definition? Not everlasting, everyone can understand. Changes also is very easy to understand. So what is the definition? According to the scripture in Pali, scriptures and commentaries, it means that it never appeared in the past. In Pali, it's called Ahutot Sambunti or Hutot Pati Ventiti. Ahutot means it never appeared in the past. Sambunti means due to suitable condition, then it appears. Hutot Pati Ventiti means after appearing, it will cease. Cease means doesn't totally disappear. No, there's no more. You cannot say an object when the object has passed away, then with this condition it will arise again. Then it's not permanent. So the meaning is that things come where they never appeared before, and then disappear to where they never went before. Or sometimes the commentary also explains further, not being in existence, it comes to the being and then ceases. That's impermanent. They mean not being in existence, they mean that object does not appear or being stored somewhere. But this condition then is arising. Because it's depending on condition, that's why it's not permanent. It ceases. Cease means no more. It doesn't mean cease, then being kept or holding somewhere in the store. This is impermanent. So the commentary have to use many ways to explain. Not being existence, it comes to being and then ceases. Or it say that non-existent after having been is a characteristic in impermanent. It means when it has disappeared, it no longer exists anywhere. So similarly, when consciousness, the last consciousness has passed away, some experience that after consciousness has passed away, there's no more arising of new consciousness. So who are those who experience that there's no more arising of new consciousness? Only Sammasambuddha or Arahant or Paccekā. Why the no more consciousness arising? Why there's no more rebirth? Because they have uprooted all the mental defilements, such as ignorance, craving for existence. But those who have not yet attained the highest stage of enlightenment, such as Arahant or Paccekā Buddha or Sammasambuddha, so after passing away of the last consciousness in the previous life, then because this defilements of ignorance, craving for existence, then there will be arising of another consciousness. So that consciousness is not the consciousness of the last moment of the previous life. Then where will this consciousness take place? The other condition is the karma that's ripening at the last moment of life. So that's why we say karma determine your destiny. So consciousness is also arising and passing away. But nowadays, Sometimes you may come across even those who have studied the Dharma say that consciousness will take birth again, the same consciousness. But there's wrong view in accordance with the teaching of the Buddha. I think I shall explain in more details tomorrow during the Dharma talks. So now it's about nearly quarter to ten. So we do the chanting. We shall chant together. Samanta Chakavalesu Atra Kachantu Devata Sadamam Muni Rajyasa Sunantu Sagam Mokhadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti Piso Bhagava Araham Samma Sambuddho Vijaya Charana Sampanno Sugato Loka Vidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagava Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanaiko Pachatam Veditabo Vinyuhi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyanyapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samiji Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yatidam Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketam Lokasa Nati me saranang anyam Buddho me saranam varam etena sacca vajena hotu te jaya mangalam nati me saranam anyam dhammo me saranam varam etena sacca vajena hotu te jaya mangalam nati me saranam anyam sangho me saranam varam etena sacca vajena hotu te jaya mangalam karaniya mata kusalena yanta santam padam abhisamecha sako ujucha suhujucha suaco casamudo anatimani santu sako ca subaro ca apakico ca salawukawuti santindriyo ca nipako ca apagabo kule swananugido nacakuda macale kinci yena vinyupale upavadiyum sukino wa kemino hontu sabasata bhavantu sukitata yekechi pana bhutati tasavata varavana vasisa Dikawaye wa mahanta Majjima dasaka anukatula Dikawaye wa adita Yewa dure wasanti avidure Buta wa samba visiwa Sabasata bhavantu sukitata Naparo param nikubeta Nati manyeta katacina kanchi Vyaro sana patikasanya Nanya manya sadukha miceya Matayata niyam putam Ayusa eka puta manurake Ewanpi sababhutesu Manasam bhavaye aparimanam Metanca sabalokasmi Manasambhavaye aparimanam Udam adocha tiriyancha Asambhadam avera masapatam Titam charam nisinova Sayano yavata savita mido Etam satim aditeya Brahma metam vihara midamahu Ditincha anupagamma Silavatasanena sampanno Kamesu vineyaketam Nahi jatu kapasya punareti Yam dunimitam awamangalangca Yocamanapo sakuna sasado papagaho dusupinam akantam buddhanubhavena vinasamintu yam dunimitam avamangalam cha yocha manato sakuna sasado papagaho dusupinam akantam dhammanubhavena vinasamintu yam dunimitam avamangalam cha yocha manapo sakuna sasado papagaho dusupinam akantam sanghanubhavena vinasamintu bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba buddhanubhavena sagga sukhi bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba dhammanubhavena sagga sukhi bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sanghanubhavena sagga sukhi bhavantu te sabbitiyo vivacchantu soko rogo vinasatu mate bhavantu andaraya sukhi dikayuko bhava abhivadana silesa nityang udapachayino chattaro dhamma vadanti ayuvanno sukhaṃ balaṃ. And sharing of merits. Imano punya bhagam mata pitu nancha acariya nancha sabha sata nancha sabha mita nancha sabha nyati nancha sabha pita nancha sabha devata nancha bhajema sabbe sata sukhita hontu idan me nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idan me nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idan me nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idan me punyam asavakaya vaham hotu idan me punyam nibbanasa pachayo hotu sadhu sadhu sadhu.